Spencer Lee, BBC Radio Merseyside.
Hello, good evening. My guest today is Chan Romero, the man who wrote and first recorded this song. So many versions of Hippie Hippie Shake, and I don't think any of them were over 2 minutes. That was a hit version from the Georgia Satellites. Chan Romero was born in Billings, Montana in 1941, and he made the original version of Hippie Hippie Shake in 1959, and he was recently on Merseyside for personal appearances, including a great evening at the British Music Experience. He was travelling with Mark Guerrero, G-U-E-R-R-E-R-O, Mark Guerrero, who was part of a 60s band called Mark and the Escorts, and whose father, Lalo Guerrero, was one of the best-known Mexican singer and songwriters. So I started our conversation by asking Mark how he felt when a Chicano teenager, Richie Valens, was having hits in 1958.
Yeah, I was a little kid, so that was I was like 8 or 9. But by the time I was about 12 years old in East Los Angeles, like every kid had a guitar and every kid knew La Bamba. My dad tells me the story that La Bamba was the first song I ever played because he bought me a guitar in Mexico. It cost $8. His car broke down. They were fixing the car. He showed me a few chords. He said by the time we were driving home, I was playing and singing La Bamba. We're Americans, but we call ourselves, we're Mexican Americans, Americans of Mexican descent. But we call ourselves Chicanos. That's kind of a slang word that many of us have embraced, and I know Chan feels the same way.
What about your dad? What sort of music was he doing?
All Spanish language. Even though he was perfectly bilingual, he looked so Mexican-Indian. Even the record companies didn't allow him to sing in English, even though he was greatly qualified to do it. They didn't let him, so he was in the Spanish field virtually all of his life. As he got older, he did a few things in English, but and bilingual.
I've got a Ry Cooder album where he's doing some of your father's songs. So how did that come about?
Well, Ry Cooder decided to do an album based on the story of the Dodger Stadium, Chavez Ravine. In order to build the stadium, they had to tear down a Mexican-American barrio neighborhood. Kicked everybody out, tore down the town, the district, and built the stadium. So it was a great injustice. So Ry Cooder decided to do an album with that theme. Yeah. He wanted to hire a lot of Mexican-American musicians to tell the story, and he said that my dad was the first guy he wanted to get, the cornerstone of the project. He contacted my dad, and my dad didn't know who the heck Ry Cooder was. And one day, my dad said, "This guy keeps calling me and bugging me, Cy Cooder." I said, "Ry Cooder? Dad, please, you know, call him back. This is really important. This guy's really amazing, legendary." So finally, I talked to Ry, and I said, "Look at just tell me what you need, and I'll get my dad to do it." So he said, "I need a song about, you know, these boxers and that were from Chavez Ravine." And so I called my dad and said, "Dad, you got to do this." My dad wrote the song in one day. I called Ry Cooder. I said, "Well, he did the song. I'll be right down." And Ry drove all the way from Santa Monica, 150 miles, to Palm Springs and met with us. My dad sang him the song, shook his hand. That started the project. My dad wrote that one song, Corrido del Boxeo, sort of an ode to a boxer kind of a thing. Yeah. And then they used two of my dad's already written songs, Los Chucos Suaves, a song from the late 40s, a pachuco swing, hip cat type of song, and a song he wrote about the Tucson barrio called Barrio Viejo, a song about the barrio that he grew up in, partially got torn down as well. So those three songs of his are on the album, and I assisted on the project and got to be there through the whole thing, and it was a fantastic experience. Flaco Jimenez was involved, Jim Keltner. So I got to sit with Jim and talk about his experiences with George Harrison and John Lennon, and it was a tremendous experience.
And he's one of the ironies that they built the stadium and then the Mexicans were going to watch the matches.
Oh yeah, they love the Dodgers.
Qué ironía, si lo sabes, que había dos hermanos Chávez, pugilistas que nacieron en mero Chávez Ravine. Carlos y Fabela Chávez, de la Loma y Palo Verde, decían, si peleas limpio, siempre ganas, nunca pierdes. En el Auditorio Olímpico quedaban bien con la gente, nunca hicieron enemigos, peleaban honradamente. No pudieron ganar el pleito Chávez Ravine, se les echaron encima con mentiras hasta el fin, se batieron en el lodo hasta que perdieron todo. La historia del boxeo, has ganado o has perdido, pero en Chávez Ravine todo quedó en el olvido. Nadie sabe los secretos que quedaron escondidos. Ya la pagarán con Dios esa bola de bandidos.
When you were growing up, Chan, what were you listening to yourself?
First, of course, Elvis, like everybody else, and like John Lennon said, he's writing on the wall over there at the cavern, without Elvis, we wouldn't be here. A lot of us old guys from the 50s feel the same way. First time I seen Elvis on the Steve Allen show, and he said he was going to introduce America's newest rock and roll sensation. And man, the girls were screaming. I said, whoa, this guy must really be good, you know. So as soon as they did the commercial, turned it on to a big wiener dog, you know, the wiener dog with the big ears. They had him on a pedestal, and he said, here he is, Elvis Presley. And Elvis said, you ain't nothing but a hound dog. You know, I said, whoa. Yeah. Hair stood up on my head, and I said, whoa, I got to do this. Yeah. Man. just totally blew me away. And man, I'll tell you, he just hit me like a ton of bricks. I had five brothers and four sisters. All my brothers played guitar and sang country. I was an oddball, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to play the guitar and did my first talent show on a local channel. And I won the contest singing Hound Dog. So all of my friends, they started calling me Little Elvis. So I said, oh boy, I'm really, really on the move here.
So you were always singing in English rather than Spanish, were you?
No, my mother sang Spanish. She loved a singer from Mexico named Lydia Mendoza. My relatives would come over and they'd say, Auntie Rachel, sing us that song, you know, and she was real shy. But they'd eventually get her to sing, but she's the one that sang Spanish in the family. The rest of us, especially the boys, we sang, you know, Hank Williams and Eddie Arnold and, you know, all those good old country guys. It was quite a time in our lives when we started playing music.
Were you thinking of becoming a professional musician then, or were you doing a day job?
I was a dishwasher at a little hotel when I was about 11, 12, and then they raised us, our parents and our grandparents went to Montana to work in the fields, you know, typical migrant workers. My grandfather, the one that named me Chan, he called me Chano Chano Patase Marano. That means little boy with pig's feet. My friends started calling me Chan. My grandfather, Dueto, my mom's dad, he always says, si no trabajas, no vas a comer. That means if you don't work, you ain't going to eat. So I said, wow, he's got quite a point there. So as a kid, I learned, you know, to make money, shine shoes, I sold papers.
Did you feel, though, that you missed out on a lot of schooling? Looking back, do you regret that?
No. You know, my rest of my life after I got out of school in the 10th grade, just started making money by playing music, you know. I did my first gig for raising money for a women's club. I met my wife, and her girlfriend came up to me during one of our breaks. We were having a Coke. She said, see that girl over there? I said, yeah, that cute one. She said, yeah, that's what she said about you. She said, boy, that guitar player's really cute. We dated that night and went out for a Coke, and here we are, 58 years. We just did our 58th anniversary. We got 12 kids, 53 grandkids, and 37 great-grandkids. When I met Mark, he was so talented. Plus, he had a studio, a recording studio in his house, and we recorded some stuff, Thrill Me So Much, and Rockin' Like There's No Tomorrow. Singer, songwriter, musician, recording engineer, he did it all.
Mark's father, so he was a pretty big name, was he?
A friend of mine is one of the elders in the Indian tribe, Agua Caliente Indians. You know what Agua Caliente means, hot water, but they own, you know, probably half of Palm Springs. This huge casino hotel that had a beautiful ballroom, and I became friends with Pat. There was three brothers, and one of his brothers was the elder of the chief of the tribe. He had asked me to officiate his daughter's wedding because I was a minister too. I officiated her wedding, Patricia, and so after we were having, you know, a big dinner, the whole works as a wedding, Mark's dad, Lalo, came up to me and said, hey, I really like that song you sang. And so we had written a song for my wife and family called He That Finds a Wife Finds a Good Thing. It's out of Proverbs 18:22. I really like that song. Where could I find that? I said, oh, I wrote it, and I said, I did a demo on it. I give him my business card. And he took the business card and...
My dad called me up. He said, I met this guy, and he's a musician, and his name was Chan. I said, Chan Romero? I don't know. I have the card here somewhere. Find the card, Dad. Find the card, please. He didn't know where. So he found the card to call me the next day. Oh, I found the card. Called Chan, and here we are 25 years later.
Here we are.
Great friends. Great friends.
Yeah. Have you written songs together as well?
We recorded together, and I recorded one of Mark's songs that he wrote. It was called Rockin' Like There's No Tomorrow. But we did a lot of music together here and there.
We haven't got a minute to waste. We're running in the human race. The doomsday clock is running down. The hands are turning round and round, round, round. Things are going out of whack. We're jumping like a heart attack. It's time for us to
So Elvis comes along, you start performing, and at what stage did you think, I'll write my own songs?
I guess I have to say by accident, because when I was 16, summer of 58, my cousins had been trying to get me to come to California to visit them. Of course, I didn't have enough money. I had a little job washing dishes, shining shoes, selling papers. So the summer of 50, I decided I'm going to California. So I got my thumb out there, started hitchhiking, and I got to Vegas. I was, almost there. The edge of the city, they got a big sign, no hitchhiking. I said, oh, Lord, what am I going to do now? And I had seen a train out in the desert. I thought, I wonder, that train looks like it's going towards California. And I jumped on that train. It was moving real slow. And I was hanging on, the stair thing on one of the boxes.
And, that's quite a daredevil thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, but at that time, you're a young kid, you're bold, and you think you can conquer the world. The conductor, he jumped out, and he come running, cussing me out. Said, you stupid kid, he said, don't you know this train? We're going through Death Valley? I said, no. I thought it looked like he was heading towards California. He said, we are, but we're going through Death Valley, and it's so hot, you could die out here. He said, you get back there in the back. There's a bunk bed set. Just lay still till we'll be about 3-4 hours. So he said, there's water in the cooler. He had one of those ice boxes with a big cube of ice. And so, man, I was really happy. I thought, boy, this is the coolest thing that's happened to me on this old hitchhiking trip.
So he saved your life, really?
Yeah, really, that's what he did. We got to East Los Angeles. It was about 5-6 in the morning. He said, the train's going to slow down to make some changes. And he said, when I tell you to go, you jump off, and we're going slow enough where you won't have to worry. Yeah, about 5-6 in the morning. He said, okay, get ready to go. So he said, go, and I jumped off the train. And luckily, I was just about a mile from my family's home. I showed up at their house. It was about 7 o'clock. Albert, my dad's nephew, he saw me, and he said, well, how did you get here? And I said, I just got off the train. He said, I know you don't know anybody here, but I got an electric guitar and an amp. He said, and I heard you like music. So he said, you're welcome to use them. So I just started fooling around with it, and then I ended up I wrote Hippie Hippie Shake and My Little Ruby and all my first songs, yeah. If I Had a Way.
Hippie Hippie Shake, had you thought, I'll write a dance song?
So I seen that movie, with Nancy Kwan. I saw Nancy Kwan on the River Kwai in that movie, and I loved the way she said, for goodness sake! And I thought, wow, that's so cool, and I just grabbed my cousin's guitar one day and it just came out, For goodness sake, I got the hippie, hippie shake. So, but I realized, wow, I wrote a song. Then I just kept writing, I took me into L.A. one day into Hollywood because he thought maybe somebody would want to hear that song. The three songs that I wrote, we called Specialty Records, Little Richard's label. At that time, you could go in, take your guitar and sing a song or two for them to listen to, and she said, the producer, the A&R man, will be out in just a few minutes. I already talked to him, and we had a date, and he said to get your two or three of your best songs, and I thought, wow, that's all I got. He come out with a hair slick back, big lock nose, like me and Mark's, an Italian guy from New York. His name was Sonny Bono. He said, yeah, I like that Ruby song. He didn't say nothing about Hippie Hippie Shake, Have Chan tighten up that song and come back and see me in a couple of weeks. I was excited. Whoa. I started working on that song to death. About that time, my dad called from Montana, and he said, I'm going to send a bus ticket. Can you put Chan on the bus? I need to get him back home because he's got to get to school. So that was the end of my career with Sonny Bono and Specialty Records.
So fine, we'll not have to.
But then the song, you get on Delphi Records, don't you? And this was produced by Bob Keane, who'd been producing Ritchie Valens.
Yeah, exactly.
So was he looking for another Ritchie Valens then, because Ritchie had died?
That's what it was. And I had a DJ friend, and he heard our band took a liking to us, and he started to promote little record hops. And one day he called me, it was in October, and we had our first snow. I went out there and he said, I want you to hear this record. And it was a little green label. It said Delphi Records. Played it and he said, that sounds like you.
So this was a Ritchie Valens record that they thought you sounded like.
Ritchie's song, yeah. Donna and La Bamba. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, I love those songs. He said, yeah, that sounds like you. We played for a while. The holidays came. And then on February 3rd was that fatal airplane crash where Ritchie and Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper got killed. The Weird Beard sent that tape to Delphi. Bob Keane said, I really like this kid's voice and his writing sounds good too. He said, I'd like to sign him to Delphi. I ended up catching a train to L.A. No, this one was paid for. But I was scared to fly because after what happened to Ritchie and Buddy and the Bopper. But we ended up going to the studio and I met the Wrecking Crew, Barney Kessel, the jazz guitarist. When Bob introduced me to him, I said, are you the same Barney Kessel that played the Cry Me a River at Julie London? And he said, yeah. I said, oh, my God, I better get out of here. I felt intimidated, you know. Them guys really kicked butt. The next session we had, I met Ritchie's mother. Bob had called her and told her that I had come from Montana. And so we met in the Gold Star Studio, and she asked me to come out to Pacoima, the house Ritchie had bought her before he died, and stay with her and the kids, which I did. They became like my second family.
For goodness sake. Shake, shake with all of your might, and then you shake. Woo! Yeah, you shake. Yeah, this ain't no thing. The hippie, hippie shake. Shake, shake with all of your might, and then you shake. Woo! Yeah, you shake. Yeah, this is no thing. The hippie, hippie shake. The hippie, hippie shake.
Well, the single comes out. Now, what's interesting, it didn't actually make the top 100, did it, at the time?
Only in, it was number 3 in Australia, did the Jerry Lee Lewis tour with Tommy Sands and some other artists, Jimmy Clanton. It didn't really roll much on the American charts. As far as Billings, Montana, my hometown, it was number 1 and the other side was number 2.
Now, did you know the record had been released in England?
No.
Yeah, well, I mean, all sorts of things happened then, didn't it? So it was these Liverpool groups like the Swinging Blue Jeans taking the song.
Exactly.
That really changed your life.
Yeah, I used to buy the Billboard. They took it to number 1 in England. When the Beatles had I Want to Hold Your Hand Out in England and Norway and Holland, moving right along with the Beatles, it really surprised me. I was very thankful for the Swinging Blue Jeans.
And did you like their version?
I really liked it. We was working with the country singer Roy Clark. You remember Roy?
Yeah.
We were doing a gig with him at Golden Nugget Casino there in Vegas, and we were on our way home that night, the band, they had the radio on, and here come the song, and one of the guys says, Chan, isn't that your song? And I listened, and I said, yeah. sounds like the Beatles, I said. Yeah. And then we listened to the rest of it, and at the end of the song, there's a new one on the charts from England, a new group called the Swinging Blue Jays. I said, whoa. So, man, I was pretty tickled. And my wife and I had 12 kids. I said, boy, when the royalty checks came in from the Blue Jeans big hit, we was pretty happy. We was able to buy a house, buy the kids a lot of nice clothes, and keep them fed.
Now, a few years after that, Mark, you're involved in a group called Mark and the Escorts. And why I mention this now is that there's a track you did that's in a current film.
Yeah, it's so crazy because the first band I ever had was Mark and the Escorts. I was 13 when it started. And so when I was about 14, just about turning 15, we made our first record. And it was an instrumental called Get Your Baby. And I played lead guitar on it. And we did two singles for GMP Crescendo Records. You know, didn't do much. It sold some. It got some radio airplay. And that was the end of it. 52 years later,
wow.
It winds up in a major motion picture. The first thing I ever did. And so it was in a movie called Logan Lucky, starring Channing Tatum, Adam Driver, James Bond, Craig.
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig's in it. So Daniel Craig is playing this southern criminal, this hick, in prison. They need him to do this heist. And so he's this tattooed southern guy. He plays it so great. So about an hour into the film, he starts doing push-ups because they're going to spring him out to help him with this bank job. And as soon as he starts doing the push-ups, the song comes on, and they play the entire record in it. And so we're on the soundtrack album with Creedence Clearwater, garage rock kind of song. You know, we're just young kids, we're screaming on the thing, and it's just this wild instrumental. That song has a history because it's been on about 4 or 5 compilation albums. Said when it came out in the major movie, it was time to get a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And because we had never signed a contract, we were kids. Yeah. But the good news is the lawyer got us some money.
Now we're in 2018. Of course, so many people have done Hippie Hippie Shake. Have you followed all the different versions that were done? Is that a sort of hobby of yours?
Somebody from Norway had sent me a tape. These are all the songs that I've found that groups have recorded the song. There was about 21 or 22. And then that was before the Georgia Satellites.
Yeah, well, that was a big hit, wasn't it? The Georgia Satellites version.
Yeah, they did a nice job on it.
Well, you wrote a song that just makes people smile as soon as they hear it.
Yeah, and, you know, my wife and I raised 12 kids. man, I said, if those groups hadn't recorded my song, I said, I raised 12 kids with that song. Because every time I'd go to the mailbox and see a royalty check, I'd say, oh, yeah, I did write that song.
So you did the Hippie Hippie Shake a lot then?
Yeah, quite a bit. I hear you. Yeah.
So, Chan Romero, Mark Guerrero, great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
If I had a way, I'd make you my own, and always you'd be just mine alone. 'Cause your kiss and your touch thrill me so much. Love, love, my dream would come true if only you would be in my arms with all of your charm. Place your love in my heart and never to part. No. Well, you just seem to be in my memory, my thoughts only of you. Oh, I hope and pray all night, all day, 'cause I, yes, I love you. If I had a way, I'd make you my own, and always you'd be just mine alone. 'Cause your kiss and your touch thrill me so much. Love, love, so
that's Drive Time with me, Connor Phillips, between 4 and 6 on BBC Radio Merseyside.
Thanks very much, Connor. And I was talking to Chan Romero with his friend Mark Guerrero there, who were recently in Liverpool for some gigs, and they did a special one at the British Music Experience. And Chan's version of Hippie Hippie Shake, the original from 1959, that is on a very good double CD called How Merseyside Got the Blues, that's got 58 tracks on it.